Welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled, Man, I don't even know if these butterflies are ever gonna get here. And it's about a new split poetry collection from James Benger and Jason Baldinger called Waiting on Hummingbirds. Did I say hummingbirds or butterflies? Did I screw it up?
You said butterflies in the title, so.
Oh, I didn't. Oh, it's hummingbirds. I'm not going to edit this out. The book is called Waiting on Hummingbirds. The podcast is actually called, I don't even know if these hummingbirds are even going to get here. And so it's about this split collaboration. And as well as an added bonus, James Benger also recently released a short collection, a stylistic departure a bit called Floating Downstream, which we will talk about as well. And one of the things, well, welcome, James and Jason. How are you all doing?
Good.
I'm all right.
Glad to be here. It's been a while.
Yes, it's been a minute, and we were on Central Time and Eastern Time and Standard Time, and it's dark at 4:48 today, I think what it was around here. And yeah, so one of the things about this split, and actually a very interesting thing happened in my brain today as I was reading Waiting on Hummingbirds. I didn't remember hummingbirds or butterflies, but I did read the collection, and something very interesting happened in my brain where I was just found myself becoming hyper aware of both of your distinct poetic voices. And I found myself, because you can lose track. So, I mean, for someone who doesn't know, and I do want to ask about how the collection comes together, it's basically there's it starts with a poem from Almost Overrated from James, and then Jason has a poem, and then James has a poem, and then and you can kind of get lost if you read quickly enough because the names aren't until the bottom of the page at the end of the poem. And you can kind of get lost, and maybe you're reading a poetry collection, and maybe you pause for a second and look at your phone, and then you look back at the poetry collection, and it's like, oh, this is a James poem. Oh, this is a Jason poem. And like the two things harmonize very nicely, but in my brain, I started it distinctly hearing both of your voices reading these poems. And I didn't need to be prompted by looking at the end. When I would get lost in it, it would still make sense.
Well, then we've done our job, apparently.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have. So how do these, I mean, how does one write a split poetry collection?
James and I have always just sort of gone back and forth. Who I don't remember. I think I started this with you 4 books ago. Was that right, James? I sent
I
you
think
the
that's right. You sent me, what was it, 20 or 30 poems, and I went
Yes.
from there.
And so that would have been Little Fires Hiding, our first one together. So I believe I led that book off. And since then, when we come around to time for another book, we both talk about it. But then James sent me the first poem for the next book, which was Everyone's Alone Tonight. So I kicked off This Still Life, and now he kicks off Waiting on Hummingbirds. So basically we get to, I think we've decided we're doing this about every other year, and we both check in with each other and make sure, and then it's like, okay, well, who leads off this one? And then they send the batch of poems first, and then the next person takes the month or 8 weeks or whatever to kind of look at what's there, figure out what they have that fits, or write to it, as the case may or may not be. And there are also instances where we may or may not have been writing to each other anyway, because we communicate via Poems 365, amongst other ways too. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, James. Sorry, that was a long answer.
No, I think you got it all. It's sort of just a back and forth, and Personally, like the way the books come out, I prefer split books that way because to me, a lot of the split poetry books I've read, and I've said this before, but a lot of them I've read, you get half a book of one person, half a book of another, and they might be on the same subject or subjects and that sort of thing. But to me, it's usually very obvious you're reading half of a book by one person and half by another. Whereas I feel like ours are more of a collaborative effort and more of a conversation. And to
Yes.
me, that feels more like a, to me, it's more of a true collaboration. Not that the other books aren't, the ones where it's half, like, you know, half in the front and half in the back or whatever. But to me, at least going back and reading them and putting them together, it feels much more like you're really partners, I guess.
I agree with that 100%. Yeah, I think these books, as they've gone, read like letters back and forth to each other. Both of our tones and writing match pretty well to each other, I think. And so when you get a batch of James poems, it's pretty easy to kind of find interlocking themes and to be able to run back and forth. And, you know, we kind of can bubble out a little further and then snap back or whatnot. You let each other kind of take the narrative, how it goes. One person doesn't really have to carry it, I guess.
Yeah, one thing I'm fascinated with thinking about like creative process and the creative this poetic dialogue or poetic collaboration is like I don't want to use the word limitation, but like working within a framework, because it seems like these collaborations, there's a very clear framework, and I guess whoever kicks off maybe is the one who maybe sets the, you know, parameters, sets the tone. I hate to use that word too, for okay, this is the subject matter of this. And this poem, this collection does seem very much a lot of thinking about youth, thinking about the past. And what does it mean then for the other one to have to respond?
It
And
makes
what
it
does
hard.
that do to your process? And what is that? What possibilities does that open up, even if it might feel like a limitation in the mind of a listener?
Well, I feel like while Jason and I might not have the same experiences, I feel like in a lot of ways we, as far as like childhood and past, there were similar maybe experiences, or we went down some of the similar roads, even though, you know, our childhoods, I think were probably pretty fairly different, and we obviously grew up in different parts of the country. And I feel like it makes it a lot easier because I feel like reading a Baldinger poem, I can relate to it, and that makes it so much easier to spark something from my own life and or, you know, and in some cases just my imagination. That's the way I look at it.
I know that when I hit poems about that, about my youth or whatnot, that I also save them for James, because I know that these books hit that. You know, we've got a way of handling our writing together, and we have these similar experiences growing up, being roughly the same age. Think you're a little younger than me. It's fairly easy to see where the other person came from. You know, the view from here is not that far, I guess I should say. I don't know. I tend to save stuff for James and slowly build my section over the year or two between books, I guess is probably the easiest way for me to say what I do with him. And then as I'm reading him, it's like, oh, I have this and it matches this poem perfectly. Hence, like Halloween 1988 and the excommunication of Bob, some such
Yes.
thing.
Which is a great transition, much better than I would have
That's
come
why I
up
threw it
with.
in.
Thank you. Can we hear those two poems?
Sure.
I think
Guess
you're
I
batting
start.
lead off. Yep.
I'm the first one. All right. Cool. So this is Halloween 1988. So you can roughly gauge how old I am. Dad dressed me up in his clothes, complete with gun belt and hat. Wouldn't give me a real pistol, though. He said, "There, you're a cowboy." And off we went. Our first time for real trick-or-treating, Halloweenin', as Dad called it. It all felt so official. First time living in a real neighborhood with actual neighbors and a city-ordained septic tank and mailboxes and stuff. It felt like we'd finally made it. And we were going to live like the folks on TV. We ambled down the gravel road, parents trailing a little behind, knocking on doors, marveling at Halloween candy that wasn't the mints from the dish at the Pizza Hut in town where mom worked. We went all the way to where the gravel of Marquette Avenue butted up with the paved Clinton Street and then turned around. Our last stop was the trailer across the gravel from our place. We'd only been in the neighborhood a couple months, but the blue and white single wide had been there even less. The owners invited us in. He was a shirtless, skinny man with an impressive brown mullet, and she was the epitome of late 80s hairspray queen. I remember a year or so after that night, she came over to our place when I had the flu to make sure I was drinking enough orange juice. The trailer was sparsely furnished. Two chairs and a coffee table, a half dozen varieties of dollar store candy amidst a hastily swept dusting of something I no longer think was confectioner's sugar. There was a giant deer head mounted on the dimly lit faux wood panel wall. I asked the man where the buck came from, and he said, "Done got me that one." Put up one bitch of a fight, though. I asked where the rest of the animal was. "Oh, he's out there. Why don't you go look? Make sure his backside's still there." I did, and it wasn't. Not long after that, mom and dad got us out of there fast. My brother walked off with an entire bag of circus peanuts. I forgot my candy.
Love it. This is the excommunication of Bob. Shake it off in front of the porcelain face of the downstairs men's room urinal when they burst in. Bob's and Tara, pushed by a troop of teenage boys, they jam into the stall, crowd for vantage. I squeeze through bottleneck, try to understand this masculine hoopla. For weeks, study hall became the Olympics of top that. Tearing phone books in half, grab ass and charley horses. And then shit got dark. Bloody knuckles with sharpened 50-cent pieces, the boys started trading blood and pain for money. Bob agreed to a new dare. He'd bite the head off a live white mouse. Boys froth as he takes his place above the bowl. Mouse appears to a blood sermon, to rising cheers. I am not a gladiator. I rush out as the moment shatters as testosterone crescendos. Mouse and head separated, swirl unceremoniously to sewers. Boys later boasted of blood streaked across Bob's teeth. I still root for the mouse, replay the moment, except as the mouse realizes its fate, it yawns, blinks twice before opening its jaws human size. Swallowing Bob before a crowd of stunned, silent teenage centurions. Catholic school is a strange place. Martyred education around core values of guilt and shame. The principal, attracted by the noise of a blood sacrifice, of a twisted ritual of manhood, she was in the hall as the bathroom cleared. Bob and the others were caught, some were expelled. Bob, he was excommunicated. I can't recall the reason that James inspired that poem. I think it was a conversation we were having on Messenger, but you did inspire that particular poem, James.
Okay.
Or shook that out of my brain somehow.
Well, I'm honored because, like, every time you read that poem, like, I have to, like, stop and take a breath.
Yeah, I always feel like I should trigger warning that poem before I read it. You
Well,
know?
I meant that in a good way. I
I
feel like
yeah, I don't know. I
that's
understand.
what good writing should do. You should
Yeah.
have to take a breath and really think about it.
I hadn't read that in a while. I felt bad for the mouse again.
Yeah, same. Same. Now that took me back a moment. I think what's for me is both of these poems. And by the way, yes, I did kind of do some mental math, and I'm the middle child of this podcast. I think I
Okay.
figured out. Yeah, so I think what's also for me fascinating why I'm attracted to those both of those pieces is as I'm starting as in my middle age, but not as middle aged as Baldinger,
Me?
plumbing the depths of the childhood stuff that I didn't fully understand, or that I just kind of like the stuff that maybe took is now taking me 30, 40 years to process.
Yeah, I understand. Isn't it, there's a really good Chris Collins poem about Omar Moreno that's not about Omar Moreno, where he's talking about plumbing the depths and looking for that direct hit. And you know, every now and again you strike it, and it's you know, you I think also did Catholic school, Matt.
I did
Part
not,
two.
not until
Oh, you're in
college.
now you're in Catholic school.
Now I'm in Catholic school, yeah.
So you didn't have it quite do the damage, or the damage came later. So,
The
but
damage definitely came later, or the damage came from other places. I'll say that. I think the damage at that age came from other places.
yeah, understood. The damage always comes from somewhere. So.
But yeah, and I think it's also for me fascinating the way that both these poems, I mean, they really capture artifacts. I love James, the septic tank is being important and a sign of something, and the mints from the Pizza Hut. Just so perfect, you know? And then you also then you yeah, you have another two deca another kind of decapitated animal, but one that's
Yeah.
a little more socially acceptable.
Yeah, I didn't see that one happening, so. But
That's
yeah,
good,
like
yeah.
that was so before we moved into town, which meant living in, on a gravel road, but we had a mailbox and stuff, and there was like an actual septic tank. Before that, we lived in like a trailer on some land out in the woods that my grandfather had cleared. And my dad bought this book on how to homestead, basically, and he dug a septic, he made his own septic tank, and he wired up electricity, and he did all that stuff. And so that up to that point, that's what I knew as normal, or that's how everyone lives, right?
Yeah.
But
Which isn't that the fascinating thing about childhood? I'll say I an example whenever in my classes we talk about ideology or culture, I always talk about that time when you're, whatever age you're in, probably happens around 7, 8, or 9, where you have the best friend forever and you are in a fixture in that friend's house to the point where you lose visitor status and you just become part of the furniture and you see how other families actually live and it totally weirds you out.
Yes,
Because
understand.
either these people are weird or my people are weird.
Or all people are weird, but you haven't
Yeah.
made that just that turnaround yet.
Yes, which
So,
I
quite
think is
yet.
also maybe a vibe of both of these. Poems. We're
Yeah.
all weird just in our own ways.
No,
No one's normal. There is no normal.
long, long stretch between here and normal.
Which in that and with that vibe, can we talk about and this one brought back memories for me because I've used that Pittsburgh toilet.
Oh, you
I
want to talk
remember
about that
fondly
one?
that space and that toilet. Well, I don't fondly remember that toilet.
No one fondly remembers this toilet, but I'm happy to read the poem. This is Hymn to a Pittsburgh Toilet, RIP to Paul CDs and Soundcat Records and all that. So, I used to look Willie Nelson in the eye every time I took a shit. Willie taped to a stall door, deep lines in his face, years of bad shows, pot busts, life's tragedies writ large. When I was hungover, I'd whistle Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain. That toilet is what we call a Pittsburgh toilet, an ode to mill hunk roots, a toilet open and exposed in a dank, low-ceiling basement filled with 40 years of forgotten record store debris. This toilet was no longer authentic. A crude plywood enclosure offered tenuous privacy. Above the commode, a picture of fish, Derek William Dick, not Abe Vigoda, singer of a faintly remembered English prog band. One sheet of fish, candid answers, streaking after bad decisions, hecklers pulling knives. I'll spare you the rest. That storefront sells kratom now, after selling shoes, then records for the better part of a century. Fred Rose or Willie, they were right. Only memories remain. Man, I miss that store still.
I do too.
I still don't miss that basement, but
No, that basement was terrifying, but wonderful.
so,
And
James, there was no real railing down a very creaky steps into a very low ceiling basement that if you were over 5'7", you would inevitably hit your head off of the joists. And it hadn't been cleaned, nor had the bathroom necessarily. The toilet was at least somewhat kept up on, so it wasn't hairy, but it was a nasty spot. When women would ask me to use the restroom, I would always gently persuade them to go to the coffee shop across the street because I got tired of hearing shit. That bathroom's disgusting. And it's like, well, if you ask to use the bathroom and you don't like it, you can't bitch about it.
It was still better than the bathroom of the Garfield Artworks, though.
Oh, that one didn't lock. That was a venue here. Or the rock room where you have to put your foot on the door.
Yes. And someone died in that rock room bathroom.
I've heard that story.
But for some reason in my brain, why I wanted to hear vocal too, because in contrast, Finding Peace in the Stream. For some
Where you
reason
went
in my mind,
that?
because you were also like, I mean, if I were a theist, I would say in that bathroom at the downstairs at Paul's and Soundcat, you were alone with God down there, but really close to the devil. Also, that floor was uneven, if I'm
Oh,
not
yeah.
mistaken. That was like a mixture of concrete and dirt and lumps of things.
Jeez. Who knows what was actually in that basement at one point in time. So I know it was a shoe store, but I don't know what it was when the building would have been built in the late 1890s, early 1900s. One or the other. I can't remember. I've seen pictures of that block from that time period, and who the hell knows what that was then? So.
Wow.
Someday you got to
Can
come to
we?
Pittsburgh. We'll give you the tour,
Yeah.
James.
Oh, yeah.
If I ever make it out there, someday I will make it out
Look forward to it. Just let me
there. All
know.
right.
So, can we hear vocal?
All right. Vocal. She finds peace in the stream, out in the woods, on the other side of the tracks, outside the park. That same stream where many of the denizens find a truth outside of the bottle or the pipe or the fists. Brown water trickling, she sinks to her knees and almost prays to the water. to herself, maybe even to a god. More than anything, she prays to the force in herself, the willingness, the need to keep on. Eyes closed, knees in the leaves and mud, she chants, "Don't leave me. Please don't leave me." It goes on so long, she never notices when she begins to say it out loud.
Love writing with you, James. Thanks.
Thank you. I believe that one came from being asked by you and Rebecca if for Trailer Park Quarterly if I had any more Trailer Park poems. And I was like, well, I guess I need to write some more Trailer Park poems.
Well, you will never get turned down if you have us trailer park poems. Well, I shouldn't say never, but you're definitely on a better path if you're submitting to Trailer Park Quarterly that way. So,
I'm stunned and speechless, which is bad for a podcast.
I wasn't sure if I was supposed to fill up air. The radio
Yeah.
DJ in me was like, "Oh, what am I supposed to do
Yeah.
here?"
Well, why don't you read the broadside bonus poem?
Okay, I can do that. This will give us another topic of conversation to roll with then. So,
And maybe then we can transition right into driveway gravel.
okay,
Okay.
awesome. So, as we finish the book. And as a small press author, trying to get people to buy stuff directly from you is the most efficient way of supporting an artist. It doesn't happen very often, unfortunately. I wish it happened more. It does happen, though, and I appreciate it anytime it does. So I have tried to start finding little extras that I can enclose in books, to maybe make them more appealing to buy from the author directly. So I had suggested to James that maybe he look at a few photos of mine and see if maybe he could turn up a poem or two from it in typical James fashion. 2 weeks later, I had seven poems to seven different photos to choose from. So ample amount of opportunity to work with. And as I was mulling that over, James went ahead and wrote another 40 poems. All to photos of mine. So the next Baldinger Benger collaboration will be Ekphrastic, my photos to his poems. And maybe that'll be next year. We'll see what happens. We'll see how release schedules and whatnot go. All of that is the aside that this comes with a broadside that is a photo that I took in Matteawan, West Virginia, of a railroad crossing reflected in a window, so it looks like it's a railroad crossing at a mountain. And this is a poem that he wrote to it. It's called "Lookout for the Locomotive." A sign as pointless as this life, he thinks, approaching the tracks, tattered pack on back, beer can empty of liquid, but full of butts in one hand, a fresh but not cold one in the other. His hands don't tremble as much as they have lately. But then they rarely do this time of evening, after the scorching sun has taken her thumb off the backs of those not blessed with air conditioning. He walks to the center of the tracks, right in front of the sign, sits down on the decaying ties, plops his aluminium ashtray in gravel, and takes a long swig of the cheapest beer on the bottom shelf. Life ain't always so bad, he thinks, lying down between the rusted rails. There's always been something magic about passing the time this way. It's not only the potential danger, but it is that too. He lights a fresh one, takes a long drag, rests his head in his hands, and thinks of anything. So that is "Lookout for the Locomotive." Thank you again, James.
Yeah, well, thank you. I like I said, you read that way better than I could. And He sent me a ton of pictures, and so that made the job easy.
Well, So James and I continue to find new ways to collaborate. I guess we'll soon have to do a selected here in the near future. Or a
I'm up for
collect.
that.
Yeah. Maybe
Or
in
what?
the
Or...
next one down the line.
Yeah.
Oh, what do you think, Matt?
What do I think? I think I want to hear driveway gravel.
Oh,
Okay.
that's right. Driveway gravel is
All right.
next.
All right. Let me get some water real quick.
And then maybe
Okay.
when noise was young after that. I'm
All right.
just putting that
Yeah.
out there.
All right. Driveway gravel. We would ride like hell in Mom's 77 Diplomat. Me behind the wheel. We pretended we were the Duke boys as we jumped imaginary gullies, hood ornament glinting in the white July sun. Mom would yell at us from the kitchen window as we wriggled out of windows instead of using doors. The glass didn't roll all the way down. She was sure we'd end up cut and sorry. Sometimes when she was away at whatever factory the temp agency sent her to, and Dad was inside doing his best to sleep off a 12-hour night shift, I'd throw the wagon in neutral and let her inch back to the dusty line where the gravel driveway met the hard-packed dirt of Marquette Avenue. Windows down, the crunch of those white rocks under the bald retreads told me freedom was just on the other side of childhood.
This is
This
called
is.
When Noise Was Young. I'm sorry, unless you had something to say, Matt. No, okay. Back when noise was young, pedal boards on dive bar stages, delay and distortion, the din of traffic, all those nothing doing Saturdays lost in feedback loops. Practice space couches overlook Mexican markets. I was learning to carry this city in my teeth then. The chain American diners of our formative years, all-night coffee and cigarettes, friendly cockroaches pull up a chair. Gathered around a talkback mic as boards bled red, needles never waver, acoustic guitars split speakers. 25 years. How did we figure on any of this? The places sounds left us, the communion found on stages, ears ringing at 3 a.m., still amped, drunk, and bereft. The last time we bumped into each other is another memory condemned. You tell me the darkness gets harder to swallow now, settles in longer, steals more. Sometimes you just can't let it go. After your father's death, questions of gender reopen. These constructs never fit right. There is no one now left to please except yourself. He reintroduces Callie after years spent less listless, living in a skin that never fit right, working through a legal world. Once you sign the papers, maybe you find yourself in that drying ink while another dead name drops away.
See, the passage of time isn't all about death, is it?
No, it's all about death.
It's possibility. It's man, when's the last time I saw a Dodge Diplomat?
Oh, I love that thing. I had a lot of memories in that
I had two different Dodge Omnis over the
thing.
years. Well, back-to-back cars, I guess, in the mid-90s when I started driving, and I have fond memories of those cars as terrible as they were. So,
I feel
yeah.
that.
My first vehicle was not that Diplomat. It was actually an 80 Aspen wagon. So
Oh, dang. I didn't
I
know if I
drove
could
that
play
thing. I literally drove that until the drive shaft fell out in the middle of the street. I think I have a poem about that somewhere.
Yes, you do, and I think you read it on this podcast in an
I
earlier
prob I'm sure
episode. I might
I
have
think it's
requested
in
that.
yeah.
It's probably one for the selected. I seem to recall it from, I don't remember which book, but
Yeah.
we definitely did it along the way. You actually have this set up pretty well. This is how we're doing the Zoom reading, Matt. James is gonna lead off, and he'll read a set, and then I'll read a set, and then we're gonna go back and forth round robin for a set, usually about 20 minutes. That's usually what we do when we do in-person readings, usually when I can make my way to Kansas City.
Yeah.
So, which hopefully I'll be able to do sometime soon, but I don't know
Well,
about that right now.
that would be great. I'll see if I can convince someone to give us a venue, whether they actually have the time and space or not.
No, that's fair. If I'm going to be there, it'll be next September. So,
Okay. All right.
speaking of the Zoom meeting, well, when's the book come out? When's the book launch? It is the year of our Lord 2024. I guess we should mention that because the internet's forever. And how can they best find out about it other than, I'll have links on the podcast.
Yeah, Facebook is probably the easiest place because that's where the Zoom information is. But yeah, you can also message me if you need it. Anyway, Friday night at 8 o'clock Eastern time, 7 p.m. Standard time on Zoom. I'm sure you'll have the meeting info in your bio bit about us.
Absolutely.
We will be reading, and like I said, James first, me second, us together. We'll probably be reading from all four books. Usually that's how it goes. We just have them there, and whatever he reads, then I decide to answer with something else, or vice versa. So
Cool. And if they want that bonus broadside, how do you get one of them?
you got to buy the book directly from us. Neither one of us have books yet. We're still waiting for them to show up. I mean, we have our author copy, but
Yeah, but
the actual book should be here this week.
indeed.
So we'll be making the announcement, and I know James usually has stuff up on his Bandcamp store. And I am trying to get my Bandcamp store running, so that there is an opportunity or another venue to give people to purchase these, that's not the Evil Empire or any of its subsidiary empires.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And James,
Cream.
you also have Floating Downstream, which you talked about it as being a stylistic departure, and or I mean, it is different. I feel it. It's different. And so, what has sort of inspired this nice little chapbook of, I guess it's a chapbook or it's a pocket. It's like
I don't know what it is. It's somewhere in
it's
between
a
a
City
chapbook and
Lights
a
pocket poet series, but not on
yeah.
City Lights. But it's the same
Right.
size as Howl and Other Poems, so we could
Yeah,
allow it.
I yeah, I was it, I yeah, that's kind of what I was going for. It's so I have, I guess, a distinctive style now, I guess, that people sort of expect from me, but
Yes.
that's not all I do. That's
No.
really about half of what I do. And I've never been very confident of my other stuff. And so I actually put this little book together, I think 2 or 3 years ago. I was going to submit it to some places and then I forgot about it. I got stuck doing other stuff, or not stuck. I chose to do other things. And then I was reading the Scottish author who does all of his own stuff by himself. And he doesn't have a publisher, he just does it all himself. And I was really enjoying his books. And I thought, well, why the heck? You know what? I'm not going to flood Spartan with another book. They've already got two more with my name on them for this year. So let's not do that. And I was like, why can't I just do this myself? And I did that. And so I did self-release this one, or self-publish or whatever, which is not something I usually do. and I was kind of ripping off City Lights and also Spartan. For a while, they did something sort of similar called I believe they called it Pop Poetry, which was a very similar style book. And they did that. They put out a ton of those several years ago, a whole series of them. And I sent them a lot of manuscripts. This was before I got a chapbook of my own or anything, and I sent them a ton of manuscripts. And I always got a very polite decline. But so anyway, yeah. So that's what happened. So this book is like my one of my other styles that I'm less confident in, I guess. But I decided, what the hell, might as well try it. I'm a
And
big
speaking
boy
of
after all.
trying it, can we hear You Will Find It?
You will find it. All right. Let's see. You told me what page that was. Oh, I found it. I actually marked
46.
that page. Yeah. All
Ah.
right. Cool. All right. You will find it. In the dark warmth and unsung beauty of small town back alleys, behind the grocery stores as the overnight crew burns one by the door, in the midnight breeze rustling the high branches of the downtown park, on the lips of the lovers lying momentarily silent in the aftermath, under the bleachers where forgotten promises percolate for eternity, under the overturned car forever remaining in an overgrown ditch, in the middle pages of yesterday's news fermenting for future poignancy. In the man's eyes as he ladles out more soup at the shelter, in the decaying final note of her thrift store guitar on Saturday night, on the often silent tongues of anyone seeking anything more. You will find it if you open your eyes, and if you're lucky, it will find you. So there's that. There's
There's
that
that, and that is super delightful.
one. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
I
you.
am also kind of a bit stunned and speechless. JB, do you have any thoughts on this book?
I've read Floating Downstream and I really enjoy it. I need to read it a second time though. So my thoughts are I read it a month ago. I'm sorry. I liked it. I meant to message you at that moment, and maybe I did. I most recently though read a novel that James wrote, a novella, I guess, and I really enjoyed that. If you could remind me of the name, James, because my brain is a terrible place for that.
It's currently called 1 Week. So yeah, I kind of took a break or a slight break from writing poetry over the course of the summer and a little bit of the fall. And I've written a couple novels before and hated them. And then I've written about somewhere between 100 to 200 pages of other ones and then given up. And this was the first one that I finished. And I was like, I actually still like this. And then I reread it and I still like this. So I sent it to Jason to see, am I crazy? Does this suck?
And it did not. I really enjoyed it. It was a very good look at that moment in our lives where we're still not quite adults and we're trying to figure it out. And I don't know that anybody else that I've read has hit that moment as well as James has.
Well,
I know this
thank
doesn't
you.
help you because you haven't read it, Matt, but
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, I'm currently working on a third draft, so we'll see. Maybe someday it'll be out.
It'll be out someday. The truth will come out at some point. No, well, I think, but I think that theme and that idea, if there is a before we hit the bottom five, sort of a cumulative statement to say about this reading or these readings or these poems together, is I think it is both a nice collection of those moments where we are unsettled that only come, that I think true perspective of only comes with age and only comes with when we have grown and become full people, or at least that we've had some time and some distance to see what the hell was happening.
I'd agree with that. I can't speak for Jason, but I know that at least for the poems that I wrote for Waiting on Hummingbirds, I couldn't have written 20 years ago. Not that I wasn't writing, and personally, sometimes I kind of get down on myself for not taking my own writing more seriously sooner. But at the same time, I'm kind of glad I didn't. I'm kind of glad I waited until I was a bit older to really pursue, or at least pursue getting things looked at by other people. Because, yeah, like you said, it sounds ageist, but you do need age to really have perspective. You
Yeah.
need some distance, I guess.
I get that. And I say that as someone who f has the same feeling. I redshirted myself for about 20 years.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
I think there's also that nice factor, though, that when you come into doing this in your 30s or slightly later or however it works, you already have a voice that you've exercised by doing it yourself. And then when the time comes that you can apply yourself more seriously to your writing, that voice is already intact and you just have to
Yeah.
build off of it. We didn't go through, or people didn't have to see the early years where, the writing may have been embarrassing, needless to say, while you were trying to find that voice. But as you get here into your and I don't mean to disparage any younger poets. Obviously, you can find your voice at whatever age you do, but we've had some distance, we have a voice, we've had a chance to build it, and you just end up seeing what happened now through, to quote Jason Molina, static and distance, I guess. And you may be able to tell a better story than you would have at that time, when it all felt so consequential, perhaps.
On that note, I think it's time for the bottom five.
Surely.
A series of questions not related to our main topic that are of a surrealistic and/or philosophical nature, and I don't remember which bottom five questions I asked before. So there might be a repeat. Longtime
It's
listeners of the
possible.
podcast might be disappointed. One of you two might be disappointed, or both of you. But the rule is, though, you have to agree on an answer. When I have more than one guest on, there is only one answer.
Oh man.
It's not
All right.
individual, and we need to have this artifact of the collaborative psychology of these Bangor Baldinger splits as you talk it out live. And Jason is calling in from a phone, so there's no hand signals. There's no glances. There's only the word to figure out what the one answer to each of these five questions is.
All right. All
Okay.
right, are you ready?
Question one. What is a historical event you wish you could have witnessed?
And my very first gut reaction would be being in the audience during the Emancipation Proclamation.
Cool. I like that. I probably would have said, being considering we just were talking about Matteawan, West Virginia, being in Matteawan, West Virginia during the mine wars, but I'm gonna go with James's answer to make this easy. Maybe next time he'll agree with me. We
Yeah,
can
and there's
keep
no
going off
Pinkertons.
the
It's
ground.
well, actually, that we say that, and the theme of the splits is somebody kicks off,
Hmm.
or
All
somebody
right.
bats first. James just bat first, so Jason,
Okay.
you're up.
All
Is
right,
there a
ready.
person, famous or known only to you, that you refuse to believe is dead?
Oh, bad.
Wow.
Yes, to believe is dead.
Yeah. DB Cooper.
Ooh. Ooh, that's a good
Ooh.
one. I wouldn't have thought of that, but I like that a lot.
The original outlaw, baby.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going with that. That's a good answer.
This is how deep the mind meld has gone. Actually, we're kind of like, yeah, that was a good one.
Well, yeah, like I wouldn't have thought of that, but as the second he said it, I'm like, yeah, that's the right answer.
Everybody wants to meet DB Cooper, don't they?
Yeah.
And he's got to still be out there.
Yeah. You know, there's always the, I went, so speaking of Catholic school, I went to St. Francis College, now St. Francis University, and one of the things that struck me and has struck me about how the world has changed is the statues of St. Francis of Assisi that used to be around campus look like this guy who barely ate food and slept out in the wilderness with just a tunic and sometimes no shoes. Like there was a great one of him in the cafeteria that he was completely gaunt. And I always said, for me, that St. Francis of Assisi is like what DB Cooper would have looked like if he would have lived. Like he would have just come out of the woods, like, I had to burn the money to stay warm, just like kind of thing. And I was like, that's, and now all of the statues, newer statues on campus, are these like very Caucasian European, well-fed. You can put an Apple AirPod in one of their ears and it would look perfectly fine and normal kind of people, and not like this guy who, used to mix cinders into his mush because he enjoyed the mush he ate too much because bread and water was too sinfully material for him.
Man, that is
Yes.
simply material, I will say.
Yes. All right. Question three. This is a binary. There's two choices, there's two options. What type of being would you least want to share a living space with?
Ooh.
Robots or ghosts?
Ooh. Ooh,
Robot.
yeah, robots. I'm saying robots.
Absolutely robots.
Feel like
Ooh.
ghosts, for all I know, they're somebody I might have talked to when they were alive. So, I might have hung out with them.
It's easy enough to get away from the ghost too. You just turn on the lights or some shit and they go away.
Yeah, well, are they locked into where they're haunting? You can always just, when you get tired of them, I'm gonna go like down the street and do something or whatever.
Isn't that the whole point of ghosting? Watch me disappear from
Oh
your
yeah,
universe and then
oh
come
man, we could ghost the ghost.
See, there you go.
Ghosting the ghost.
You can't
Love it.
ghost the fucking
All right,
robot, but you can
that's the
ghost the
next
ghost.
title for the next book, or the book
Ghost.
after the next. Ghosting the
Ghosting the
ghost.
ghost. Ghosting the ghost.
I love it.
Yes. All right.
Collaboration
Question.
knows no bounds.
Yes. It's just, the Borg. Question four. What's the most annoying sound in the world?
Oh, initial reaction would be alarm clock. That seems too easy. There's got to be something else.
The tuning of a guitar. Once it's tuned, it's fine, but that incessant, yeah, that
Ah.
drives me nuts. Sorry, it just does. So,
I can agree with that. Or kind of playing off of that, as you might, no one's going to see this on the podcast, but I've got some guitars behind me. Almost all of them came from pawn shops, and they were all under $100. Very little of them actually are well intonated, because I'm not very good at that. So, what sounds really good on the third fret is not so great on the 12th. And that's might be for me, like when I'm not that I'm good or anything, but when I'm screwing around and I'm actually for once like, oh, that actually sounds cool, and then you go to do something else and I'm like, that's awful. So that's kind of playing off that, I guess.
So tuning guitars and buzzy frets.
Buzzing. Oh, buzzing frets, yeah.
Well, that's a title.
Yes, there you go. Next title.
All right. Question five. We're almost through this. This one might be harder. This one, I hope this one's harder. I hope this one sparks controversy. Question
Ooh.
five. What is the cultural sacred cow and or canonical text that you hate in spite of the fact that everyone seems to revere it? This could be a book, this could be an album, this could be a film, this could be a play, this could be just something that you hate, though everybody else seems to think it's just the best thing ever.
Easiest answer I can come up with is Wilco's Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. Such a boring record. It's like Steely Dan.
Steely Dan, I'll give you.
Or just Steely Dan in general.
I'm not a Steely Dan fan. I don't have the hatred for him that some people do. I'm never gonna buy. I'd say never. I don't see myself ever buying a Steely Dan record, or going out of my way to listen to them ever. I don't hate them the way some people do. Man, when I was thinking, I have never, despite what everybody. Not everybody. A lot of people have told me I have never been able to get into a single Genesis record. There has yet to be one that I haven't like made it more than a couple songs into before I'm like, I gotta listen to something else or just listen to nothing.
These are two bands that I've tried. I've owned records by. I even tried in my late 30s to buy Steely Dan records, and then found myself in my late 40s going, "I don't need these Steely Dan records." Apparently, middle age lied to me. So there you go. There's your next title. Apparently, middle age lied to me.
Middle, that's yeah.
You know.
And I feel like Baldinger and the Buzzing Frets should be a band name.
Well, after pond hockey and slug sweater and circus Atari, I guess that's next.
Yes. All right, again, once again, James Benger, Jason Baldinger, Waiting on Hummingbirds, which will be available. You can get it from the board. You can get it from some Bandcamp pages. There will be links when I
Next
post
couple
this
days.
online, which probably going to be soon, because on what is that, Friday,
Yes.
December 6th,
You got it.
Friday, December 6th in the year 2024. How did we make it this long? At 8 p.m. Eastern on Zoom will be the collaborative book launch reading. And there'll be links to that on the website as well. I'm out of words for some reason. But yeah.
You
And again,
said a
there'll be
bunch
links for all that. Yes. Thank you, JB and JB.
them.
Good
It's always
seeing you
great
too.
to do this, man.
Yeah,
Anytime.
it's anytime
Hopefully
as
see you
yeah, you
at
keep cranking them out. Let's keep doing this. Baldinger is already like the Paul Lynde, Tony Randall of this podcast anyway. So,
Richard Dawson on the match game.
oh, Richard Dawson on the math game, Charles Nelson Reilly on Hollywood Squares.
Yep. You got it.
Yes. That's about it. Our next episode will eventually happen, and it will be about something, probably John Dorsey. I'm going to be honest. I think that's who's next in the queue, and then Victor Adam Clevenger. But that's, you don't know what's going to happen. The world could explode. But I got to read some poetry books in order to schedule those podcasts. And it's finals week for me, or it's getting to be finals week for me. But hey, our homepage where you can find new and old episodes is Good to Die Podcast. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Podcasts, which, hey, if people need closed captioning, we got it on YouTube Podcasts, or the YouTube Music Service podcast player thing. We're All Gonna Die is on Facebook, and maybe I'll get like a blue sky for it or something. I don't know. I don't know what the world is anymore. But anyway, thank you both.
Thanks, Matt.
James Benger, Jason Baldinger. It's always such a pleasure to have both of you.
We appreciate it.
Thanks. I look forward to it whenever I get the
Yes.
invite.
Awesome. And let's just keep it rolling. I should probably just, JB, I should probably just make you a guest host at this point.
I feel like I sort of took that action as the show went on tonight. So,
Yes, and that's
he's here less
okay.
than me, so I have to turn the camera on him, so I'm not the one
Yes.
talking all the time.
Yes. For the 5 episodes that I do a year anymore. But and thanks to Andrew Fox for the lovely theme music. Later, meets.
2, 3, 4.